Welcome to the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium podcast, a podcast about this nursing life. I'm Nicole Nash-Arnold from Nurse Manager HQ.
And I'm Sue Walker from the Nursing CPD Institute. And together each week, we seek out interesting people to discover what a red-hot nursing life looks like. Today, I welcome to the This Nursing Life microphone, Arlene Bennett, President of the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre. ANMC is a living memorial to the heroism and sacrifice of Australian nurses who gave their life or spent years in Japanese prisoner of war camps during the Second World War. ANMC mission is honouring nurses past, present and future. Welcome to the microphone, Ali.
Thank you very much, Sue.
Now, Arlene, today we're commencing a series of podcasts about the founding nurses of the ANMC, and we're starting the story with a discussion on Vivian Bullwinkle. Arlene, who was Vivian Bullwinkle?
Well, Vivian Bullwinkle was a South Australian nurse who trained at Broken Hill Hospital, and she eventually left South Australia and came to Victoria and worked here for a while. And then in 1940, the war had started and she decided to enlist in the Australian Army as a member of the Australian Army Nursing Service.
So where did Vivian serve?
Vivian left Australia on the hospital ship Wonganella, and they were not certain of where they were going at first, but 5 days into their voyage, the course would change direction and she arrived in Singapore. They thought they might have been going to the Middle East. From there, she went to Malaya and she worked there until the Japanese started advance down the Malay Peninsula, and she returned to Singapore once more. And just prior to the fall of Singapore, the decision was made to evacuate the nurses. So on the 11th of February, half of the nurses would be sent home on the Empire Star. Following evening, the remaining nurses would be reluctantly evacuated.
And what happened? Was that the SS Vanier Brook?
Yes. So Vivian and 64 nurses left Singapore on the SS Vanier Brook on the 12th of February 1942. It left quite late at night and it used to hug the coast of the islands, and it used to hide in the little coves by day. And it was proceeded that way for a couple of days. But the nurses were on a hopelessly overcrowded ship and they were prepared for all eventualities and continued to care for the women and children on the ship.
And then what happened to the SS Vanier Brook?
Well, the SS Vanier Brook was spotted by Japanese planes and was eventually bombed, it along with about 40 other ships. So there were about 5,000 people who died during that bombing attack. The nurses made sure that everyone who could abandon ship did so, and they encouraged people to go to the lifeboats or to swim to floating debris. They then abandoned the ship themselves. 12 of the nurses who had left Singapore would die at the time of the bombing or shortly thereafter.
And so the ship went down. What happened to Vivian?
Well, Vivian eventually washed up on shore and met up with 21 of the fellow nurses. So, and therein lies part of her story.
So she met up with her nursing colleagues. What happened to the group then?
Well, there were 24 other nurses on the beach when Vivian arrived, and there were also officers, soldiers, civilian men and women and children, and there was about 100 people. So they thought that they would have safety in numbers.
And were they safe in numbers?
Not really.
What happened?
Well, there were many sick and injured people on the beach, and the nurses cared for them the best that they could with what little they had. And they had lit a beacon on the shore for people who are still at sea trying to find their way in. But unfortunately, the men were decided to walk into Muntok to advise the Japanese that they were there and that there were more people on the beach. And during that time, Matron Irene Drummond urged the women and children to walk into the town, which they did. The men returned with the Japanese, and then the unthinkable happened.
What occurred then?
Well, the Japanese ordered the men to walk around a bluff where they were shot or bayoneted to death. And it was quite horrendous, really. And the nurses knew then that they were in a lot of trouble.
And so all the men were taken away and massacred. And then the Japanese came back to the beach. What happened then?
Well, they came back around the corner wiping their bloodied bayonets, which must have been pretty horrendous for the nurses. And they then ordered the 22 nurses and two civilian women to walk into the sea. And when they were waist deep, they'd be shot. They had a machine gun trained on them all. So Matron Drummond would turn to her nurses just before she fell and said, "Chin up, girls. I'm proud of you. I love you all." She was the first to be shot, and Vivian was at the end of the line. And while she was hit in the back, it really didn't affect any vital organs.
So that's an inspiring story in regards to Matron Drummond. So they all were walked into the water and they were all shot in the back. Vivian survived, though. The Japanese walked away assuming the nurses were dead.
Yes.
But how did she survive that massacre?
Well, Vivian was a little bit taller than all of the other nurses, and so the bullet hit her above her pelvis and came straight out the other side, and it didn't hit any internal organs. And when she fell over in the water with the force of the bullet, she just floated. She eventually floated back into shore with the current, and she discovered that the Japanese had left the beach, and she was the only person who had survived the massacre. However, there were two men who survived the massacre, but they had swum out to sea and they did see what happened to the nurses.
So she makes it to the beach. She goes and hides in the jungle. What happens then?
Well, she made it into the jungle, which was just around the corner, and there was a little stream of fresh water there, and she went into the jungle and hid, and she slept there for about 24 hours. And when she woke, she heard a voice call to her. And it was a British soldier who'd been injured.
And is that Private Kingsley?
Yes, it is Private Kingsley. And he was quite badly hurt. And Vivian took care of him. She walked to a nearby village and asked for help, but the men of the village were concerned that the Japanese would harm them if they assisted. And so she decided to leave the village. But as she did so, some of the women from the village brought her some food, and this was repeated several times over the next few days. And Vivian used to dress Private Kingsley's wound with coconut husk and clean the wound with fresh water, and she did what she could at the time.
So how fortunate that she met women.
Yes, that's
and right. They were willing to be supportive of them.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
After 12 days, Vivian and Private Kingsley decide to give themselves up. What was the conversation that they had?
Well, they decided that after 12 days that really they couldn't keep using the villagers as a source of food, so they decided that they would have to give themselves up. And they were discussing it, but Private Kingsley said to Vivian that he didn't want to give himself up that day. Could he wait one more day? And she sort of looked at him in a puzzled fashion and said, "Why?" And he said, "Because today is my birthday and I want to spend it as a free man."
Oh, isn't that a terrible, touching story?
It is. God love it. Yes.
Now, they were held in the Cooley lines for about 6 weeks. Why were they moved from there?
Well, the Cooley lines, they were buildings for the coolies who were Chinese workers at the mine, and they weren't very satisfactory for the nurses, but I don't really know why they were moved, except that many of the nurses themselves thought that it might have been to break their spirit. So,
right.
Yeah, so the nurses were sent to Palembang on board a coal barge that was dirty and dusty, and it took many hours for them to actually arrive. And so, you know, quite horrendous, that trip across there.
And that's when they were moved to their permanent camp then?
Well, it was their permanent camp for about 18 months.
Yes.
And then the nurses would be moved back to Montauk again. And during this time in camp, there were four nurses who would die due to things like beriberi, malaria, bank of fever, which they think is probably dengue fever, and malnutrition.
Now, I know you've researched Vivian's story extensively. Did Vivian talk about her time as a prisoner of war?
She did, but in a very reserved sort of manner. She didn't say a lot about her captivity. I've read speeches that she's given Probus groups and RSLs and other groups where she was invited to speak, and she might allude to the fact that she'd been a prisoner of war, but there was never very much information in that. I don't think that she spoke about it all that openly.
And was that more a political thing?
It's hard to know, really, but I suspect that it was, because there are documents around where the British government had given ex-POWs a document which said that they were not to discuss what had happened to them at all. They were just to shut up and put up with what happened.
Did Private Kingsley make it?
Unfortunately, he didn't. He didn't survive, but he died a couple of days after they arrived in camp, and Vivian would be beside his bed when he died.
Isn't it fortunate that they at least had someone who knew him?
Oh, it was fantastic. And that she was there at the end was pretty amazing.
Now, when, and this is such an abbreviated version, there's so many questions we could ask, but when the nurses were liberated from the camp, what happened then?
Well, they were met by Matron Annie Sage and Sister Lloyd and were taken to Lahat Airport. And from there, they would fly to Singapore and they would leave the camp in their uniforms that they had saved. And there's a picture at the Australian War Memorial which indicates that. And they had saved their uniforms for that very day that they would be liberated. And when they got to Singapore, they were taken to hospital and they spent a few days recuperating. In fact, some of them were so thin and so unused to soft beds that they would be found in the middle of the night lying underneath their beds on the floor.
Because that's were the conditions that they had gotten used to.
Yes, they had just got so used to sleeping on concrete or on wood, and they just couldn't cope with the softness of the mattresses.
And you were saying they were all, like, malnutrition was a main issue.
It was a main issue. Some of them had TB, some of them were just really sick, but malnutrition was a major issue for them.
So when Vivian returned to Australia, what happened then?
Well, upon her return home, she spent some time in hospital initially, and then she recommenced her nursing career, basically. She got on with life.
So how did she get on with her life?
Well, I don't know how she got on with her life, really. I'm just not sure that I would get on with my life quite so well.
No, it's such an amazing story. Like, she had an extremely successful nursing career, didn't she?
She did indeed. When she came home and after the hospitalisation, she was still in the army until 1947, and she had decided that they were going to have a nurses' memorial centre, and she and Betty Jeffrey used to visit all the hospitals and RSLs in Victoria, fundraising, and they were involved in a radiothon which was held in Melbourne, which was actually a statewide radio link, and it was a program in aid of the nurses. And she certainly kept herself very busy.
She also was director of nursing of a number of facilities and quite involved with the Australian College of Nursing.
Yes, yes. She did so many things. She got a diploma of nursing administration and eventually became the director of nursing at Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital in Melbourne. She was involved in Operation Baby Lift in the 1970s, which was an operation to get some of the orphans out of South Vietnam just before the fall of Saigon. She was the vice president of the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre, president of the College of Nursing. She was a member of the Directors of Nursing Association in 1964 to 1969. She was the first woman trustee of the Australian War Memorial in Canberra, and many more organisations, really. And she was recognised in so many ways. She received an Order of Australia, an MBE, Associate of the Australian Red Cross, the Efficiency Decoration, which was a military decoration, and she also was the recipient of the Florence Nightingale Medal. And part of the citation for the Order of Australia reads, "Her heroism, courage, and humanitarian achievements are unique." And I think, you know, that pretty much sums her up. She was unique.
Now, why was it important to both her and Betty Jeffries, who, as you said, was in the prisoner of war camp with her, why was it so important for them that the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre was created?
Well, Vivian and many of the ex-POW nurses had a dream of developing a Nurses Memorial Centre to be a living memorial for the nurses who were lost during World War II. And they'd first decided that when they arrived home, they would set up a nurses' memorial centre, and this happened in the camps in Sumatra. So they had this very long-held dream.
This long-held plan. Now, all her achievements post a horrendous, horrendous experience, did Vivian have a happy life post-service? Did she have a long life?
Well, she did have a long life, but unsure whether she was happy or not, I can't ever find that out because there's no records of those sorts of things. But I'm certain that she had moments that she would remember those awful periods in captivity and what had happened on Raji Beach. But over her life, she would spend much time writing letters and visiting the families of the girls who were massacred on Raji Beach. And I've heard many stories about this part of her life. I've read some of the letters that she's written to the families, which are quite touching. And it takes a very special person to be able to do that, I would think.
She got married, didn't she? She got married and had children.
Yes, she did. She married Frank Statham in 1977 and retired to Western Australia.
Arlene, what an exceptional woman and what an exceptional story, and how fabulous that you and your team carry on her work. I know you have attended the memorial services held on Bank Island. Can you tell me about
that? Yes, sure. In 2017, I had the honour of attending the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the massacre on Banker Island, and I was invited to speak at one of the services held on the day. It was a long and emotionally exhausting day, and we joined many relatives of the nurses who had been killed on Raji Beach, as well as the Australian ambassador to Indonesia and his staff and his British counterparts. And I was standing on the beach where it had all happened so long ago, and there was a large contingent of Indonesian nurses who said prayers and threw petals into the sea after we'd had our service there. And my friend Judy Campbell and I was standing on the beach having a quiet cry to ourselves. But the Indonesian nurses turned and they noticed that we were crying, and they rushed over to see what was wrong. And I told them that it had been quite an emotional day, and one of them took my hand and said to me that nurses were the same the world over, and that we had one heart and that we had one spirit. I can't begin to tell you what that meant to me at the time. Of course, it made the tears run a bit faster, but never mind. And these nurses work in hospitals delivering wonderful care to their patients, but without many of the items that we as Australian nurses take for granted.
That's an amazing experience to be able to share and assist your colleagues there as well.
Yes, it'd be great to be able to help them in some way with education or an exchange program, perhaps.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. Now, Arlene, based on our discussion today about Vivian Bullwinkle, what is it that you wish all nurses knew so that they can live their best nursing life?
Well, I think that Vivian was such a fine example of a nurse. Despite adversity, she always gave the best of care when perhaps that was all she could give, especially in the camps. She was compassionate. She was very human. She was always very approachable. And I've heard so many stories about her, and each person that she dealt with feels very special that she had dealt with them. And she seems to be able to bring out the best in people, I think. And I think that she would certainly try to change the things that she could for the betterment of others. But there were other things in life, of course, she had no control over. So she was always the best nurse that she could be. And I think that that's what we should all aspire to be.
Exceptional words. Thank you. Arlene, thanks for being our guest at the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium podcast today and sharing with us your story about Vivian Bullwinkle. Now, I encourage all nurses listening to go to the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre website to get a better understanding of the work they do. For a nominal fee, you can become a member of the centre and continue to carry on the work of Vivian Bullwinkle and others who created the centre after their experiences as prisoners of war. Next time we meet Arlene, we're going to discuss Betty Jeffrey, who was captured with Vivian Bullwinkle, and on their return, Betty and Vivian worked tirelessly fundraising to create the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre, which you're so much a part of today.
Yes, thank you very much, Sue. It was great talking to you about this wonderful woman.
She is a wonderful woman. Thank you very much, Arlene. Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I'm good, Sue. How about you?
Fabulously well on this glorious day.
Gloria's also where I am, which is lovely.
Good. So it was such an interesting discussion with Arlene from the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre.
What an organisation. And I know we've talked about, we've interviewed Arlene, so it's the second time we've had the pleasure of her visit to us here at the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium. And I love their mandate, which is to honour past, present and future. And I remember saying to you at the time that I can't believe that I, as an Australian registered nurse, I don't know the Vivian Bullwinkle story. And to hear more about her story in what Arlene offered today was, I don't know what the right word is, it's an excruciating story.
It is, and I think I said at one point of the interview, like, it's such a huge story that we didn't pay it justice by condensing it down to such a short period of time. So it was only the key bits that we actually spoke about. But it makes my mind fry.
Certainly a series of unfortunate events, isn't it?
But how unlucky.
Oh, like unbelievable.
How unlucky. And it was luck that they didn't go on the first ship, that they went on the second ship, that the second ship was exceptionally crowded. That was the ship that was found by a Japanese force and bombed. There were so many unfortunate things that happened that created the situation where they ultimately found themselves.
But to be the sole survivor after the planes bombed it, they abandoned ship, they're washed up, the men are shot, and then they obviously lived, who knows what that moment in their experience was like, but then to be marched into the water. Weirdly, because she's a tall woman, she's the sole survivor, and then she's lived, but then ends up being a prisoner of war. Heartbreaking story.
But the actual terror, that's the only word I can use to describe it, the profound terror of all of those moments.
I know.
And then waking up in the water and thinking, I'm still alive.
But you're so right when you say the terror of so many of those moments, like the abandoning ship and then the washing up and, of course, that moment where she was shot and then the imminent moment where she knew, she must have known she was going to be a prisoner of war very shortly. Must have been terrifying as well. And yet, as Arlene was telling that story, I couldn't not hear about how there were these moments where the ship was overcrowded. And so the nurses, of which I think by this stage there was, 64 of them. So they're now nursing these, what is presumably largely civilian and military, and so women and children and people on this ship, and they're nursing them, which not what they were there for, yet that's what we do, isn't it? We turn up, and if nursing needs to be done, then nursing is what it's done. And then they look after the villagers, and then they're shot, and she looks after the soldier, and then she looks after, while she's the sole survivor in the jungle, she's being looked after. Nurses just continue to execute on our mandate of being a patient advocate, don't we?
And I think that relates to the fact that we have to be in our profession exceptionally organised.
Mm.
And I would imagine she just went into organisation mode. So yep. This is the situation. What do I need to do? What do I need to get? These are the steps I'm going to take. Let's do that.
Mm. Like, there she is. She's got the skills to do it, as do her colleagues while they were with her. We've got the skills to look after this overcrowded ship. Let's get in and get it done.
And then getting people off the boat, getting people off the ship as it's sinking, getting people to hang on to bits of wood, it blows my mind. Like, every step would have been terrifying. Terrifying that you're being evacuated from Singapore on an overcrowded ship because the enemy is imminent.
Mm.
Then in those overcrowded conditions, being concerned, are we going to make it? Then obviously the ship's bombed, we're not going to make it.
Mm.
And then floating in the water, finally getting to the island. Thank God for Major Drummond that she sent those women and children off so they weren't marched into the ocean and killed as well.
You know, well, I was just about to bring up Matron Drummond because she struck me the first time I heard the brief version of this story. That moment, of course, when she sent the women and children away, but also then when imminent death is abundantly clear and her words were, "Chin up, girls, I'm proud of you all, I love you all." She showed an incredible amount of leadership for a woman that was but 37 years old. Very young woman.
Every time I hear that story, it still brings tear to my eye.
Me too.
Because she knew exactly what was going to happen
If it was me, I'd be apoplexic with fear. But she had the strength and the wherewithal to give the nod to her team. I know what's going to happen, guys. I love you. I'm proud of you. Ba-bang.
It's incredible.
And 37, what a fabulous woman.
I know. It does demonstrate the stoicism that was of that time. And all the way through, I mean, Vivian Bullwinkle, of course, was profoundly stoic. But Matron Drummond was also in that time, that the stoicism, that's part of that, our ancestry, that we still to this day, we just get in and get it done. Despite the fact that the healthcare system is not what it could be and it's not what it should be, we've still got those ancestors in us that are just get it in and get it done. But it was a much more profound in that time, in the 40s, that stoicism, I think.
But you're right, Nick. Even in the time of COVID, nurses are turning up to work knowing there's not enough personal protective equipment.
Yeah.
Reusing single-use items and putting them in bloody plastic sandwich boxes for them to dry out, but still they turn up.
Yeah.
Well, can you see a group of engineers going, oh, look, guys, we haven't really got the safety equipment we need to do on this job, but you don't mind doing it, do you?
Mm. I know, it's incredible. I think something happened in the universe, but there's a little bit of Matron Drummond and Vivian Bullwinkle and it's all that we still do that. And nurses, we make noise about it, but ultimately the patient comes first. So we just get it done.
Yeah, that's what we do. But yes, the most amazing woman to have that strength. And I don't know how I would feel if I was Vivian floating in the water thinking, am I alive? Am I dead? How, you know, I mean, and because I love being tall now. Like, because it was a machine gun and they basically massacred those girls. And because it was firing at the same level, because she was tall, it went through her hip rather than any other vital organ. But floating in the water and thinking, you know, she must have been thinking to herself, well, am I dead?
I know.
What is this? And then dragging herself out of the water and finding somewhere in the jungle some sort of where she felt safe so she could finally collapse.
Don't you love how the villagers fed them?
Yeah, and I love the fact that it was the women in the village that fed her. The blokes were too scared, but the women could see that they needed food and they were, and again, they put themselves at jeopardy to make sure that she was okay.
It's amazing.
The other sad part of that story is when her and Kingsley were in the jungle and he said, oh, you know, they finally make the decision to give themselves up and he said, oh, but not today. And it was his birthday.
Can you imagine what that must have been like for the pair of them that she finds out his birthday? Like, they must have felt so far from home.
You just would have looked at him and said, oh, happy birthday, love you. Like, I think it shows some compassion. Obviously, his injuries were severe enough that it did take his life. But it does show some compassion from the people who were holding them that they allowed her. He called for her, apparently, and they allowed her to sit with him while he passed away. But again, another sadness, the way in which these women and anyone who experiences war, but specifically today we're talking about Vivian, but all that she experienced to be able to come out the other end, and apparently their uniforms were hanging off them. The reason that they were hospitalized before coming home is that they were that emaciated that the Australian public would have been appalled. So they were that emaciated. So all the conditions, she saw her colleagues pass away, she saw brutality, she never knew what the next day was going to bring, and she then has this stellar career.
Oh, that's amazing. I found it heartbreaking and yet another sign of the times when Arlene said, you know, she didn't talk much about publicly in the life that she led after that, about her life as a POW or the experiences that she had, and that there was an expectation that she shut up and put up, were her Arlene's words of the time. And I guess there are two things. It was a sign of the times that you were stoic, and so the expectation is that you continue to be stoic. And there wasn't a lot of thought about mental health at that time in our world. We've come a long way since then, because she must have needed significant support to reintegrate into a happy, healthy, normal life, given what she had been through. And I wonder how much support she got. I suspect very, very little.
Well, they basically came home and thanks, job well done.
Yeah.
And they were discharged, like, go, you know, back into the community. the same as many other people who returned from that war. But in relation to Vivian and the other nurses who also survived the camp and came home with her, that we'll learn about in other podcasts, it amazes me that you've had this whole thing happen to you. Then you get home and they say, thanks very much, and you're discharged. Yeah. And I think the way she dealt with it was to make sure no one forgot.
Yes.
And I think that's why her mission was to make sure there is a memorial, because no one can forget what I've seen.
And it must have given her profound meaning and purpose to have left this organisation behind, to honour past, present and future, in that that's what gave her purpose, and that was a form of her, I guess, a therapy. I mean, in terms of her being able to live a happy life, in that she didn't want probably a pleasurable life where she was, you know, flying off and living on the French Riviera. She wanted a purposeful life for the rest. And she probably wanted to honour those that didn't make it, and she was. And it must have helped her considerably. But I thank God that we've moved a long way in those days, and people like Vivian, even though it's not what she wanted to do, but it does demonstrate when you're not okay that there are ways and means for you to access the support. And she found a way, but other people, you know, wouldn't be like her. She was clearly an unbelievably extraordinary woman who just went, right, this is what I need to make a happy life, and this is how I'm going to do that. But there are others that wouldn't be able to do that. And, you know, the world's changed a lot, thank God.
Yeah, and she became, you know, heavily involved in nursing, had a stellar career. And I did love the discussion that Arlene had, because the Arlene and people from the Australian Nurses Memorial Centre do go back to the beach and to the memorial services that are held. And I think next year is the 75th anniversary. Depends when you're listening to this podcast. I think 2021 is the 75th anniversary. But when Arlene and her colleague were on the beach and they became a little teary, and one of the local nurses said to Arlene, oh, is everything all right? Is everything all right? And Arlene says, oh, I'm just a little bit overcome. And he said, we're nurses. We understand.
Yeah.
Nurses are a universal international force, and they do understand.
It's camaraderie, isn't it? That's what happens with nurses, is you end up forming that camaraderie, and that's what you look for, and it's there. And you can meet a nurse, a random nurse, anywhere in the world, and you have that same sense of, you know, it's our tribe.
And that's what they have with those girls. But I hope every registered nurse, every student nurse needs to know the story of Vivian Bullwinkle and the story of the other nurses that happened. And I think that's why Vivian was so forceful in her life that no one forgets, because if people don't know the story, or we forget the story, then it can happen again. But if the story is front of mind and each generation of nurses understands the terror, then we can only work towards it never happening again.
And the other thing about Vivian's story is that it's an incredible nursing story. This is, once again,
it is
about who we are and what we do as a community of human beings that come together in this profession. Her story is so unspeakably violent and terrible, but it is an amazing demonstration of, my God, look at what we can do.
Yeah, I agree with your sister. On that contemplative note,
indeed,
I wish you farewell and a fantastic day.
See you soon.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium. Make sure you visit us at the website www.nmemporium.com to subscribe to the podcast.
And if you'd like to put someone forward for us to interview, go to the same website and just click on the button.
See you guys.
Take care. Bye.